And Kathy Dawes now, along with Dr. Timothy Schaefer, Assistant Professor of Political Science, Kansas State University. And I always forget your other title. I mean, what is it now?
Assistant Director of our Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy here at K-State.
And I know that, Tim, obviously, all kinds of things we could talk about. You mentioned when you walked in the door, you just got back from Boston.
I did.
Tell us about your conference.
Yeah, I was just in Boston at Tufts University at an annual conference called the Frontiers of Democracy, which is quite a title. But it's a group of university faculty, community activists, NGO leaders, some people from government, but largely exploring these questions of what does it take to make democracy work as it should? You know, what kind of roles, relationships do we have with one another? So there were a lot of great presenters. There were some workshops. I was doing some presenting while there as well. And it's, I don't know, it's just very invigorating to be with people who are passionate about, much as your previous guests were kind of speaking about, this idea of taking on civic leadership roles and thinking of themselves as not passive members of a place, but really being active citizens.
And, you know, it's interesting. And it was a good segue, quite honestly. I did not plan it.
It's nice when it works that
way. It was just odd that it happened that way. But I had never really thought that much about their leadership program and how they do try to learn better to have people discuss, because we are all so different. We all have different leadership styles, different personalities.
Yeah, I was just, before I walked in here, was on a call with some folks at the Sunflower Foundation putting together a little workshop on civil discourse with their fellows program. And it's, you know, not all that different from what you were just talking about, is how do you create space for people to be able to interact with one another, to work across difference, especially as we've talked about many times before, the climate that we exist in these days and have for a while has been really challenging and divisive. And so how do we confront those perceived differences, then also kind of work through them?
You mentioned you have a book out.
I do, yeah.
Give you a little chance for free advertising.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, the press will love this. It's a kind of heady title, but so I'll say it, then I'll make some sense of it. It's called Deliberative Pedagogy, Teaching and Learning for Democratic Engagement. It's from Michigan State University Press. So it's an academic book in the sense that it's going through those channels, but it's really something that was put together with a lot of collaborators from across the United States and around the world, literally, Israel, Russia, South Africa, Australia, all sorts of places. But it's a collection of essays of university faculty who are using what we call deliberative democracy, this idea of dialogue and discussion in the ways that they're teaching classes, the way that they're interacting with students and with communities. And so we're really excited to have that out. It's officially out July 1, but as I've been frantically searching all of Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all those places, it's officially now there for order. So if people are interested in some of this kind of work that the folks were talking about earlier today, this morning, and then what we've been chatting about, it's hopefully going to be a resource for those people.
Pretty straightforward. I mean, would the average layman get something out
of
it then?
Well, you know, I will say, even though I have lots of titles and all these things, I very intentionally – I'm an academic, and sometimes we can get a certain rap and an identity. It's written very very much in a vein and in a tradition that would be accessible to people. They're largely short little kind of stories, case studies, if you will, of how people have been using this idea of dialogue and deliberation and teaching and working with community partners and those types of things. So it's something that could be accessible. The goal was not to make it daunting or challenging for somebody to pick it up and say, oh, okay, I can make some sense of this. And I write a lot in this book, too, about some of the historical antecedents that have shaped this kind of work. So if people are familiar with the term Chautauqua or the Chautauqua movement, this, you know, the community-based discussion model. And I also write about the extension system, which a lot of people know in this part of the country for certain reasons, but historically and continuing today, extension has played and continues to play an important role in convening people to deal with the issues that matter to the communities in which they serve. So it's those types of things that show up there. So hopefully it could be interesting. Don't let the title scare anybody away. I guess I'll put it that way.
Now, historically, let's go to historically a bit. I don't know that we've done that in a while.
No,
and I think sometimes we lose sight of that, but it's so important. I think a lot of times we forget that we get so involved in the here and now and what's going on and why are people so upset. I mean, have we seen this kind of thing in our past?
Yeah, we have. You know, I actually spend probably about half of my time doing historical work, and it's striking that, you know, we have kind of deep roots of one, difference and division, and figuring out what that means, what it looks like. And then at the same time, we also have these historical examples of attempts to work through some of that. And that's what I was alluding to a moment ago, is that there have been these kind of moments where we've really made some concerted efforts to have more constructive dialogue, to have a discourse that's useful for people. Just a case in point, coming back from Boston, and my wife very helpfully picked some books up for me at the K-State Library, and I was flipping through them yesterday. It was the mailer that the Farm Bureau used to put out, and it was from 1937, and M.L. Wilson, the extension director, he was a very important guy in the USDA at that time, was writing about, and this is where I do a lot of work on, they were called farmer discussion groups in the 30s and 40s, and it was, you know, basically convening members of rural communities to come together to talk about the issues that mattered. So they were talking about things like imports and exports. They were talking about taxes. They were talking about soil erosion. So they were talking about the environmental issues. They were talking about, you know, do we need to pave these roads? Is this the kind of issue? All the sort of kind of mundane, uninteresting things that we continue to wrestle with today, as you know, covering the local news of, well, do we want to invest in this? Do we need to think about, you know, infrastructure? Do we need to think about public schools? The same kind of thing. So we have a long history in this country of opportunities and spaces, kind of civic space for people to be able to talk and interact and to learn from and with one another. What's important is to be able to identify those and remember we do have possibilities, and it's not just this, you know, it's us versus them, or it's our community versus that community, or it's this state against that state, or this party against another. We really need to see ourselves as something bigger. And that's part of what makes history so interesting to me, is that we have a chance to look back and say, oh, yeah, there was a different view of how we can live with one another.
Are we really that different when it comes right down to it?
Right. I mean, I could go on these little stories. I had a great opportunity. We were delayed coming out of Boston, so we sat on the tarmac for a little bit longer, and I was sitting beside this retired cardiologist from New Mexico, and we ended up just having this wonderful conversation about kind of the state of politics. And he was fascinated by where I was coming back from, and different political parties, affiliations, and interests, but finding a lot of commonality that we shared. And he was really intrigued by, one, the fact that I did the things that I said I do, which I do. But I didn't mention it earlier, but, you know, I'm part of the National Institute for Civil Discourse, and that is a tremendous institution that is trying to bridge some of these differences. There's a campaign right now for a revived civility and respect that is targeted to elected officials, but also everybody. And there are some resources and things that people can use to help facilitate some of those discussions. And I think that's what's so important, is that, right, to your question, There are going to be some things that we're always going to have differences about, but that's healthy. It's appropriate. What's not helpful or healthy, or what I would say is appropriate, is this inability to even consider something that is not, you know, kind of on the list of things that I believe or what I think should be done. There's a lot of give and take that I think we're losing right now, and we've got bad role models, and then we're imitating that in a lot of other settings.
Do you feel like we are making any progress? I mean, you still continue to hear it. I can't remember last time you were on if we talked some about the Roger Marshall forum that was
We
in
did
Romigo.
A little bit, yeah.
And then I know that Jerry Moran had a similar one in the Kansas City area where people were very upset about health care and kind of what was going on with that. And I don't know. Are we able to listen to each other?
Hopefully. I would say hopefully as well. And, you know, I think one of the and this was one of the themes that was coming up at that conference in Boston, is this tension between this idea of a deliberative democracy and discourse with the more kind of confrontational politics of, you know, that's all fine and good to talk about you know, the nuance of some issue. But some things are, this is really important right now, and we need to address this. This is why people protest, why they block roads, why they do these kinds of things, to make those really kind of explicit statements. And I think both are obviously important, but I think also finding the bridge between the really passionate kind of activist orientation, wedding that with this idea of like, all right, I need to understand a little bit of where you're coming from, or else I'm not going to have any sense of what are the things that drive you, what are the values that make you make the decision that you do. It's really easy to demonize somebody. It's harder to do so when you have a sense of them being a person, of being somebody who cares about their family, their community, their livelihood. We're all going to share those things. How we get there, though, is going to be the thing that differs a little bit sometimes.
Looks like we have a phone call. Let's go ahead and take that call. Welcome to In Focus with Tim Schaefer today, Kansas Hello. State University. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is a very interesting topic, and glad you have the guest on, you know, in light of the political differences. But I would just ask a question. Do you not think that the fundamental basis for all the disagreements is really really lies in the pursuit of what is true and not true, what is truth? And we live in a society or an era where truth is relative now, and I don't see how that can be. Truth is reality. Truth is historical. We have 4,000 years history to base substantiate certain truths, and if you disregard the search for truth, or if you try to cover it up, or if you try to redefine it, then it just blow everything up that you're trying to do.
Great question. I think this question about kind of the issue of truth and what do we believe and what do we know is a critical thing to kind of wrestle with. And I think especially when we start thinking about kind of space for a civil discourse, recognizing that people's experiences, their lives and histories are, in many ways, they're overlapping each other, but there are also places where they're divergent, where there are different experiences. And that's where, you know, a lot of my background and experience in this comes to a place how do we even get into an environment where, you know, someone like yourself would have that ability to raise that kind of question, and for others to then be able to hear that and to respond to it, to say, yes, I think we would want to say there's something important about kind of common knowledge, shared knowledge about an issue, to not use that as a weapon that would to dismiss or alienate others from participating if they don't share the same perspectives or the worldview that you might.
I appreciate the call. We do have another caller, and I don't know if our first one was done, but let's go ahead and move along, I guess. And welcome to In Focus. Go ahead, please. You're with Dr. Tim Schaefer. Go ahead.
Hello. I was at the Representative Marshall discussion in Winnego, and I was the last person to speak. And this is what I said. I said, Representative Marshall, I heartily disagree with your opinion, with your position on health care, but I apologize to you on behalf of my fellow participants, because you did not deserve to be cursed at, and you did not deserve to be lectured at length by someone from the Bible. And he was very appreciative. And, you know, my remarks were not reported by the media at all. I saw them interviewing the guy that was verbally abusive and had to be taken out by the police. So part of the problem, I think, is that when anybody does anything that is conciliatory, it's totally underreported.
Good point. I'm with the media, but ma'am, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's all got to be sensational anymore.
Well, and no, I was just going to say thanks for that comment, because I think it also speaks to, you know, the climate in the world that we exist in, largely what is attractive in those situations for, you know, for various media are the things that are the more extreme or the confrontational interactions, right? It's I use a few of these examples all the time when I teach about these kinds of issues. They often don't. There was this example in California where they brought people across party lines to work on something, and they actually came to a point of resolution. And the paper that was covering at the time, they weren't really interested in that. They really liked the idea of people coming together and having kind of this fractious conversation. Not so much that they actually they came to a point of kind of mutual understanding and collaboration. And so I think your point about the recent experience there. And actually, we talked about this last time, Kathy, when I was in, mm-hmm. is, you know, how might you do those kinds of things differently? And that's a big part of what I do in my work at K-State and across the state and elsewhere, is how do you create space for better public participation? We have a lot of examples, and the one that the caller was just noting, the setup, the environment, those things all contribute to how do we interact with one another, right? If we create a space where that, you know, Congressman Marshall's standing in the front of the room and everybody else has to line up in a queue and say their thing, and there's not an actual conversation, but it's just a space where it's now your turn, so you get to say your thing. That's not all that helpful or productive. And I remember you kind of gave me a look of like, how would we do this differently? And mm-hmm. I was talking about smaller tables and conversations. And it's those kinds of things. It's part of the system, the structure, the approach that we have to creating an environment that can, it doesn't always, but it can aid in our ability to have a more productive kind of discourse. And so I lament for the caller the experience of not having your voice kind of heard in some of that, but it's really
appreciate
important.
The call. We are overdue for
break. We are.
Which is great. We love the phone calls, but let's go ahead and take that break. Dr. Timothy Schaefer again with us today with Civic Discourse and Democracy, Kansas State University, and also Assistant Professor of Political Science. 537-1350. Keep the calls coming. We'll have a few more minutes with Tim today, and you're listening to In Focus on News Radio KMAN.
This is Clay Robbins, owner of the all-new Robbins Motors in Manhattan.